They just killed these kids and started the movie, and I was like, holy crap.
I definitely wanted more cougar action in this.
Nick's getting old, obviously. They pulled him off very well.
She called security, but what's she going to do otherwise?
Oh, come on. Not the Russian again. The Russian was so comic accurate.
Hello, and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside of the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of All Panel Creations. With me today are the man who has been trapped in an elevator before with his pants down, Jeremy Parmentier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I'm not a loser, Dad.
And with us tonight, we have our own Blagyver, Fergal Amayo.
Well, I am a Blagyver, and yes, I can do stuff like the mooch and the pooch, but I'll tell you, I'm the founder of Gotham Knight Creations, where the government did special treatments on me, and I can stop your heart with my mind.
Guys, this is our first show we've done with just the three of us in quite some time.
I think the last one was Garfield.
And I think this movie is right in line with Garfield.
It is that they actually call it the spiritual sequel to Garfield. That's true.
You folks have to you have to stop such things.
No, our movie tonight is 2010's The Loser, starring Idris Elba, Zoe Saldana. I always get her name messed up. Saldana.
I have to share that you said it before we started this podcast, Saldana, and you said it correctly. And then as soon as we were recording, you're like, I've never seen this name before. I think it's all a joke now. I think now you're intentionally doing it.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan, directed by Sylvian White.
We're not them. We're the losers.
Ladies.
But even the government's best.
We're in.
And the crowd goes wild.
Freeze! Clay, we have a situation here.
Get betrayed.
This is Max. Change of plans. The losers know too much. Kill them.
Good times.
We're not soldiers anymore. We're fugitives.
Want your life back? You're gonna have to steal it.
Who are you?
I have a business proposition for you, Clay.
I can help you find Max.
What's the catch, lady?
It's pretty much a suicide mission.
That's not, like, foreboding at all.
Let's not confuse this movie with 2000's Loser with Jason Biggs.
Well, we're going to have a long episode because that's what I watched. We are in some trouble.
Before we jump in, guys, the new Superman movie is about to come out. Obviously, we're recording this well in advance. Who plans on seeing it either the first weekend or the second weekend it's coming out?
Already got my IMAX tickets. This is one of those things. I have to see it. As a purely nerd and as an owner of a comic store and as someone who loves this process and seeing as many remakes, I must see it. So yeah, I'm IMAX fan, man.
I'm excited for it, sort of. Like, I'm interested, but the chance of me actually going to the theater to see it is about 1%. I don't go to the movies very often. Only when my children really want to go to a movie. This is not on their radar. The last thing I saw in the theaters was Minecraft. And I think the next thing I'll see is probably Sonic 4 or whatever the next kid's video game movie is. But I will eventually see it. Since everything goes to streaming about 13 minutes after it goes in the theater, I'll see it.
Yeah, you'll probably see Minecraft 2, Children Yearn for the Mines.
Did anybody see Sinners on streaming this weekend? Because it was literally on HBO. I turned on HBO to watch a movie. I'm like, what? Didn't this just kill it in the movie theater? Why is that streaming for free?
The window is now so short for these things. It's like about a month long. I have not seen it. And I actually, for Superman, I am potentially going to go see this. I have some friends. We're looking at doing it. So long as life doesn't throw us a monkey wrench between now and then. For those who don't know, typically when it's just the three of us, we go through and click, you know, have like a randomization of a few different movies. And then we go through that list. And Fergal, you actually were adamant that we chose The Losers for today's episode. Why would you choose The Losers?
Well, several reasons. Besides, I actually think this is one of the under. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't have your steelbook knowledge, of course, Chris, or Jeremy, your amazing wit. What I do have is a little bit of keyboard time and an opportunity to check back on the story. And for me, the comic was amazing. The artist, Jock, I don't know if you guys are familiar with individual artists like this guy. He is absolutely phenomenal. He's worked on actual movie productions. Probably one of the best artists on the planet still to this day. Just makes amazing art. I actually thought the story was just corny enough to be good. I like the bad guy. They made a couple minor changes in the movies. I like having a bad guy like Max. As a matter of fact, I think they could have made him even more bad, but I think Jason Patrick pulled him off. Again, wait for the movie, but I just think it's a great under. It's really, someone on Reddit said it's one of the under. It's actually like Thor The Walking Dead, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's, you know, Captain America, all of these rolled into one comic book movie.
So obviously you're familiar with the comic, Fergal, but Jeremy, were you familiar with this comic?
I had not read this comic, and actually I went to go find, because I know you can get the trade of it fairly easy, but my local store didn't have it, and I waited till the last minute to find it, so I didn't buy it online. Because I did it, this was not one I was familiar with, but I want to know more.
Yeah, I never was aware of this with comic, but this is a movie that if you go watch it, you cannot know it's from a comic. I mean, they're blatant about it up front. But yeah, I was not aware this was a comic book. So, but was this your first time viewing this movie?
For me, yes. This was all new to me. The comic was not something I'd read. I'd never seen this before. I loosely remember this coming out, but I couldn't have told you a word about it until today when I watched it.
I actually didn't see this one in the theaters. This is something I didn't see. This is one during a period when I was going heavy and just didn't have time to go see a movie that wasn't quite top billing. But I liked the comic enough that as soon as it came on video, I bought the video. And so I actually owned the original video when it first came out back in 2010.
Yep, this is the first time I saw it today, so no, I do not own the Steelbook. So, Fergal, you want to give us a little background on this comic?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team of guys. Well, first off, okay, let me go back. Let's take it all the way back. Losers was originally a DC line from 1959, kind of a different line. Original Losers, kind of a World War II kind of thing. DC's kind of imprint on, you know, Howling Commando, Sergeant Rock?
Yeah, Sergeant Rock.
It was reinvented in 2006 by Andy Diggle and Jock. They created this under the DC umbrella under Vertigo. Won Eisner Awards. Actually, it was Jock's first award for cover art. In the cover art that you see that won that award is literally like the cover art in the movie. And actually, funny fact, he did some of the conceptual art for this movie. Anywhere that was comic was Jock that was doing that because it was so true. Where they could be true, they were very true panel to panel, where they could be. Even Aisha, Cougar, Pooch, all of them kind of looked like they, even, which I thought was cool, Roke looked just like he did, you know, for the majority.
Quick spoiler warning, if this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss certain elements of this might be considered spoilers for this reimagining of the A-Team, so consider yourself warned. So, Jeremy, since we don't have a guest today, you want us to walk through the plot?
Yeah, you just stole. I was going to say this is basically the A-Team, because it is. This is a series of commandos that were out on some mission for the United States government. They're betrayed by their own government somehow, by this voice on the radio, Max, that's basically like overridden their attempt to salvage what seems to be a disastrous operation that was going to kill a bunch of children. And they were supposed to be taken out at the end, but they managed to escape. Unfortunately, killing a bunch of children in the process, not them, but their escape caused that. So they basically have been hiding in Bolivia for 4 years. I want to say it's 4 years. No, 4 months. It's not long. For a handful of months, and someone contacts them out of the blue and says they know how to get a hold of this Max character. They can get their revenge. They can clear their names. And so this team of five commandos that have been, you know, kind of living and hiding or coming out using their skills they gained in the military that were already kind of their elite commandos, to get even with this person who caused their life to fall apart.
Yeah, if it had been 4 years in Bolivia, someone's got to tell Pooch that's not his kid.
If you can find them and if you can hire them, you too can hire the Losers.
Yeah, that name is not really a selling point. But the five main characters of the Losers group, which one is your favorite? I mean, they're all different characters.
I like Jensen. Jensen's dope. I think he's really cool. I think the underrated character, here's the problem with a movie like this. You put a ton of A-listers in this movie. All of them were A. There was nobody, maybe Cougar. Cougar was the only one that was quite not well known. And he actually played the guy who played the least lines in the entire movie. But you put these guys all together, and every one of them, Clay was portrayed incredibly well. Roke, I mean, you know, I think he did it really. I mean, the scar, the attitude. Pooch was like, you know, Pooch is the man. Pooch is awesome. And Jensen's like, I'm going to kill you with my mind. Just a funny guy, right? I just think the whole Aisha was cool. It's hard to have a favorite character in this movie.
My favorite was Jensen. I agree. That's Chris Evans' character in the movie. And normally I don't like Chris Evans in a lot of things. He's fine as Captain America. But generally, like, I was kind of annoyed by him in Fantastic Four. There's been other things he's been in I didn't care for him in. I liked him in this role. He's sort of like the tech guy, but also, if you're going to go to the A-Team analogy, he's face, right? He looks handsome. He's able to kind of get into places unassumingly because he looks like a tech guy, sort of. And then the other person you mentioned, Cougar, who's like the sniper, loved him as well. But I'm going to be honest, up until towards the end of the movie, other than those two, which you could figure out their specialties were, I didn't really know what everyone else did other than that they were good at being commandos, right? But like, when you look at the summary and you look at what they're listed, it's like, oh, he's a demo expert and he's like a heavy weapons expert. And like, that's great. And maybe they really explain that in the mission at the start that kind of goes poorly, but I missed that somewhat. I mean, I watched it, but I didn't make that connection. So other than those two, I kind of was just like, hey, everyone else is just like, I mean, they're fine, but like these two have a specific role, and the sniper specifically, Cougar, he's not in a lot of the big scenes you'd remember except for the very end, but like he's there all the time and he's always got a function and a role. They use that sniper ability just to even like have him go out, you know, ahead of time and kind of lay land on the area so he can see everything with that sniper rifle scope. So like they really use him well, and I like that he has a specific function. So those two are my big two. But you're right, I do like all these characters, even if I didn't know what their specialty was. You know, the what's his other name?
Clay?
Pooch. Like, I liked Pooch because he's got that bit of humanity. He's got this kid on the way that he's now, you know, his wife doesn't know he's still alive because they've been faking their own deaths in Bolivia for 4 months. So he's got, like, all these kind of reasons to think, like, maybe he's, not do you think he's going to turn on them, but, you know, is he going to, they give him the option to run. Is he going to take it so that he can try to get back to escape this what's probably a current, you know, a death wish mission. On the off chance they succeed, they clear their names, but if not, they're dead anyway. What's it matter? He's got a reason to live. These other guys, other than trying to survive, they don't have it. So I liked all the characters in this pretty much, but they definitely took me a while to learn who they were and what they did, except for Jansen.
Well, it's funny. While you were talking, it sort of dawned on me. We kind of alluded to the A-team. Except for Cougar, they all, I think, have a one-to-one ratio with the A-team. Jensen is face, like you said. I think Rogue is supposed to be like the B.A. Baracus, meaning that he does demolition, he blows stuff up, that kind of thing.
The big thing is he had the knives. So you guys remember that? Like, he was very good at the knives, licking the knives. That's his thing in the comic, is the knives.
And then Pooch is Cougar, is a Murdoch. You know, the transportation guy, the guy with the chopper, all that, right? And then Clay is what's his name?
Hannibal.
Hannibal, yeah.
Yeah.
Except, like I said, Cougar's the only one that doesn't have a one-to-one ratio, I think.
Actually, he does, because in the later seasons of the A-team, they did have some Hispanic member that joined them. I don't remember his name. And he served a purpose, just like Cougar did. Served a purpose, wasn't all heavy scenes, but he's integral to a lot of plot points.
Aisha is the one that didn't have a counterpart.
Well, she wasn't part of the team. She was, actually, the A-team did have that female role. I forgot what her name was, who'd helped them get the missions.
It changed every episode. That character changed. I'm not joking.
It does change. Like, in the comics, she eventually joins up. She does eventually.
At the end of this movie, spoilers to some level, but she does seem to be part of the team at the end. But she wasn't an original member of the troop that had this happen to them.
Just so you know, I own a pink Petunia shirt because of this movie.
I think everyone should own that shirt.
I'm wearing a pink shirt in solidarity, but I actually have the pink Petunia shirt.
I'd say for me, like comically, Jensen is my favorite. Obviously, he is the comic relief, kind of like Face. He's a clever one. I'm sorry, but I can't really see him as a tech guy. I mean, he plays a tech guy, but he's too good looking for a tech guy. But well, he does he kind of reminds me more of Chris Evans' role in what was the movie he did? Not another teen movie. He's kind of playing the same character from that with the frosted tips and.
I don't know if we want to offend half our audience of good-looking tech guys that pay attention to us by saying that Chris Evans can't join that crew.
They didn't. Thankfully, the tech that's in this that he does is is very basic. It's not like they try to like, oh, I'm going to hack into this alien spaceship like in Independence Day. Like what he did makes sense to some level, but it was more like I liked where he was so like he was trying to say these like witty one-liners, but he kept failing at it and he kept like saying it back to himself like, oh, that was awful. Like I love that. That was fun.
That was great. Fergal, let's be honest. Chris Evans won, what, Sexiest Man of the Year at one point?
Yes, he did.
So did Idris Elba. I mean, so I'm sorry. He doesn't make, most people don't fall in that category.
But just for the rest of our audience, it was the middle-aged man, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who got the girl Zoe Saldana. So there's hope for us all.
True. That dad bod goes very far.
Goes very far in today's day and age.
I want to switch gears to talk about Max, the villain. I think he's polarizing for some people. Some people love him. Some people hate him. But where do you guys sit?
Well, the movie was distinctly different. So the comic splits Max into twins. So one wears a black glove, one wears a white glove. I think I should just throw that out there because that is in the comic. They're twins, but they control a lot more power. Jason Patrick wanted to do this role. So he was very keen on doing this role. And the way he approached this role is he wanted to be as bad as any one of these superhero bad guys can be. Like he had I don't know what his actual inspiration was, but he did was very clear that he wanted to play this with abandon. And I think he had a way of being able to be like, I don't give a shit, fuck you, killing people randomly, and also acting like it's not a deal, like everything's normal and, you know, just we're good. But then he shoots the lady because she mooses the umbrella. That's phenomenal. That's psychotic, but also phenomenal.
Yeah, it's over the top, but it's over the top, not like in a Nick Cage way, right? He seems very much like he's got a goal. He knows what his mission is, and he's able to think quickly. He's able to turn the plan around pretty quick. Like, oh, you know, we're going to change this all. I know I asked you to get me a team of 11 guys. I don't want that team of 11 guys. Forget it. I know you got him. Kill him. And he's like, whoa, okay. But like, he was able to change the plan real quick, and he thinks what he's doing is for the right reasons. I know that that's kind of, no one's really a cartoonish villain, but there are some that really are, like, oh, he's a drug lord or he's whatever. Like, he's working for the CIA or some three-letter agency. And so he's definitely like, he's doing these things for the better of the world, even though he is kind of a shithead and not somebody you're supposed to like. He still has, like, ultimately he's doing what he thinks is the right thing. But I also think I like how he is very much, at first you're not sure if he's going to be the kind of bad guy who doesn't get his hands dirty, but no, pretty quick you turn it like he'll do whatever. He doesn't care. He seems like the kind of guy who's like, oh, I'll let this other guy do all my bad work for me. But then, I mean, even later on when they finally get the delivery from the Indians and he just takes them out, like, right there in the trailer, like, okay, yep, he's not afraid to do anything bad. Also, his cockiness towards the end of the movie when he's confronted on top of that crane by Clay, just his boldness was unbelievable. He's like, well, you're clearly not going to shoot me. Here's why. Now, you know, spoilers, he might get shot. But it was definitely like a really good face-off. I liked him as a villain because, again, he wasn't cartoonishly over the top like when we watched Punisher, the John Travolta.
The
that was overly top. No,
the John Russian Travolta.
John Travolta, that was over the top and ridiculous.
Oh, come on. Not the Russian again. The Russian was so
I didn't bring it up. That wasn't me. That wasn't me.
Oh, man.
And it was comic accurate, but I didn't like it. But I thought he was fine. But I can see why people might not like him because he is so almost, he's cartoonishly evil, but again, he has... The motivation behind it is, you know, maybe it's because the current climate we're in, but some people are very much like, oh, look, I'm cartoonishly evil, but I have ultimately this is for the good of the world. And he's in that same boat.
Yeah. When I was watching it, I didn't know anything about the comic at first. And I felt his role was, it was like there are two different roles going on. And like one time he felt very much like a cartoonish Bond villain, you know, very over the top. He'll kill anybody. Like you said, Fertile, he killed the woman that was carrying his parasol. His umbrella, and just because she, you know, got hit, you know, the wind knocked her back a little bit, and he was exposed to the sun. But other times, he felt very calculated. I'm like, I was sitting there watching, like, why does his portrayal feel very sort of like bipolar? And then I noticed he was wearing two different gloves. He was wearing a white glove at times, a black glove at times. I was like, oh, what's that mean? That means something, because the one glove was calculated, the other glove is psychopath. And later on, after I finished the movie and went to go look things up, you're right, Fergal, there are actually in the book two different Maxes.
Yes.
And one is calculating and one's a psychopath. And I was like, oh, okay, this leads to the second movie, which never happened, which we'll talk about later. But it's like maybe they're trying to set that up at that time. I don't know, but that's what I could see why someone watching it would be like, it's a little too cartoony. He escalates quickly at times. He's not as cold and calculating as a guy with this kind of power has. I don't know. But like I said, knowing that fact, Fergal, that you brought up about there actually being two Maxes, I think makes the watching it a little bit different.
I was surprised we saw him when we did. I thought, because then when you even first see him, the first scene he's in body, you only see like the bottom half of his face and you don't see his whole face. So I was like, are they going to do this the whole time? We're not going to see his face till the very end. And it's, you know, somebody recognizable. But then that same scene, they show you who he was. But still, I was like, okay, is that the route we're going?
I thought they were going to do that too.
So here's a question for you guys. When Clay I'm just going to spoil the hell out of this movie.
You've been
warned already. When Clay shoots him and decides to go for the Snook reactor, doesn't the picture he took on his 1994 cell phone die? Because, I mean, he says,
I know in the you. Water. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm assuming that Rice didn't go and bring that bad boy back to life.
Maybe he had a plastic bag in his pocket and he sealed it in the plastic bag, a Ziploc.
It was a pretty far fall. He had time to do it.
He did. I could put it in there. I just had to make that plot hole come together while we were...
So let's tie into that, Fergal. What's your favorite scene?
I mean, there are a lot of them. I mean, when Pooch is on the ground, when they're at the very end and Aisha shoots the rocket launcher, I thought that was really awesome. I thought that was a really cool scene. Secondary, when Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Zaldana were in that room and the music was kicking, I thought that was the best match. And obviously, the rest of it wasn't too bad as we go.
I thought yours would have been the scene where the hotel room is being shot up and she's diving into the bathroom and you see her reflection in the glass. I really thought you were going to go with that one.
Yeah. Well, I like the surprise.
But no, I do think that silhouette of her firing off that RPG. Now, I'm not a munitions expert, but I think she was holding it wrong. It wasn't on the shoulder. She was doing it from like waist level. I'm not sure if she aimed that thing, but yeah, that was a good silhouette.
Flew off with the back of the rocket. I wonder if there was a blooper in that scene where she's like, she goes over the side of the container, then she lands on a big thing. Like, well, I won't hold that by my side anymore. Shit.
I actually liked the intro, the mission in Bolivia that goes horribly wrong. And not just because they had a good soundtrack to this movie we're going to talk about, but that starts with they're blaring Black Betty and driving through the jungle. And it's just like, this is awesome. I'm enjoying it. But the fact that, you know, they think they're going to save these kids. They put them in this helicopter and the helicopter's supposed to fly the kids away. And they'll figure out how to get out of Bolivia later. But hey, they stopped this mission that was going to kill all these kids. And then, you know, Max orders the helicopter to be shut down and they just kill the kids. And it wasn't like he missed or something happened where the helicopter went down. They just killed these kids and started the movie. And I was like, holy crap. I can't believe they just started the movie off by killing a bunch of children that you watched them save. Like, so it wasn't like it was nameless, faceless children. You saw them and they're like, hey man, we helped you out. No problem. And it was just like, wow, this is going to pull no punches for this kind of thing. But I did enjoy that. And I just generally, any of the scenes with Jansen, I was a big fan of.
Yeah. When the kids got shot out of the helicopter, that shocked me. I was like, oh, they made it out. They're going to find a way to, no, the whole thing is them being left behind in Bolivia and they got to make their way out or what have you. It's like, no, we're blowing up the helicopter and that's why they think they're dead.
Even though I've read the book and I knew this story going in, I'm kind of shocked that you guys actually thought they were going to make it out. Like, there's absolutely no doubt in your mind. But like the guy on The Voice, Max, just in the first parts of the conversation, did not, like, even when he said, well, that's disappointing, you kind of knew exactly at that moment somebody else was at the controls. And it wasn't the guy who was originally there.
Yeah, but I thought the helicopter pilot would have been like, they're not on board. Because he says this part of it, like, you can't come on board. There's not enough room for you. I thought that was a setup to kill the five of them. And they're going to leave with the kids versus blow up the helicopter. Because they know they're not on. Well, the pilot himself knows that the five of them aren't on board the helicopter. Because he says right to them, you cannot fit. So I thought he would have relayed that to Max. And Max would have known that I don't need to blow up this helicopter. I need to blow up that spot. So when that plane was coming, I thought they were going to be, bombing that spot they're at.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I think that just shows how psycho Max is. I think that sets the whole story with, Jeremy, what you just said, which is that this is a guy who'll do anything that he has to. He'll get his hands dirty no matter what it looks like.
Right, exactly.
All just pieces on a board to him.
But he also, I don't think he knew he was killing those kids in the helicopter because he thinks they're dead. He thinks he's taking these guys out, the losers team. So yes, he's awful, and he would have killed those kids by the mission he sent them on, but he didn't intentionally kill the kids in the helicopter. He thought he was killing the commandos.
Yeah.
Yes.
My favorite scene was Chris Jensen with the psychic guns.
Yes. Uh-huh. That whole section, it was great. It was an unrealistic computer thing, ignoring that. Just the infiltration of him going into this office building and kind of sneaking in by... Although I don't think he intentionally flashed everyone in the elevator, but he used that to his advantage to be like, hey, security, you got to come out here and get this guy out of the elevator.
Well, again, one more plot hole that just jumped into mind. Isn't this Goliath Worldwide? Aren't they supposed to be the security leader of everything? How does a guy just sort of waltz into an office? Aren't there multiple layers of security for security?
That's how good
company?
They are. Because he convinced the HR guy to come out right when he's entering the room.
Yeah, that made perfect sense. That was perfect. But the shooting with the fingers, amazing.
And the secretary did try to stop him from going in that room.
Sort of. She did the same thing. She's like, you can't go in. You can't go in. He's like, okay, I'll take you later. I'm going to go in real quick. And she's like, okay. She called security, but what's she going to do otherwise?
And I like the fact that they only realized who he was because I guess the guard knew him.
Yes. And then the music and then the whole way he comes through and then, which I think is unrealistic, is how does he know exactly where the little itty-bitty little holes are?
Oh, that's comic book panel right there, right?
Yes, it is.
I mean, it was like a Benny Hill scene with him running through the office, of course. That scene, actually, after the psychic gun things, reminded me very much of Wanted. I was getting flashbacks when I watched that movie.
I agree.
Because to make that shot, he's bending some bullets. I don't know what he's doing.
Well, no, I mean, he's just a really good sniper. That's what Cougar's all about. Cougar's the sniper. Clay's the leader. Roke is the demolitions expert, the knife guy. See, I'm giving you their jobs right now. Pooch is the heavy weapons. He drives, swims, or flies. Jensen's tech. Aisha's the hot one and can kill everybody.
I love that job title, the hot one. What did you guys think of the chopper theft scene?
Well planned. Very well. I'm like, well planned, but also, how do they not know where one of their, like, I just think it was, you know, somebody's, again, lax at the controls at the army base, because when the Transformers came on, they knew that helicopter was fake. So I'm just trying to figure out, does somebody not notice things or not make them line up?
They stole the GPS unit, attached it to a Sidewinder missile, and fired it off into the horizon.
But just the whole accident. They claim themselves to be a fake military unit, use a military lingo that caused the military helicopter to come out to them.
Well, that's an Humvee. And they don't follow those things. They're a dime a dozen. But I do like the fact that the semi said get her done on the side of it.
Yes, it did.
I have a question, and Purple, you would have known this because you read the source material. Did you see Roke's turn beforehand? I didn't see it coming until it was there. Like, I don't think, maybe there was telegraphed in parts of it, but it wasn't too obvious. And so once it happened, I was kind of surprised at how far back that went.
You see a little bit of it in the comics. You can kind of start to see it start to happen. Just the tension between the two of them. They're Roke is his right-hand man. So the tension between the two of them starts to change. Just the way they're dialoguing with each other in the comic. You can see some of that a little bit, that kind of foreshadows that stuff's going sideways. And they do. They have a hell of a fight. They have a really good fight. You know, I think that just kind of leads you to believe. And it's interesting because in real life, wouldn't Idris Elba kick Jeffrey Dean Morgan's ass? Is there not a world where that doesn't happen effectively?
I mean, this world, apparently, but...
Yeah. I didn't see it coming. Not at all. Like, it didn't feel like a movie that needed that kind of double turn up on the end of it. But his name was Rogue. I mean, if anyone's going to betray you, it's the Rogue of the party. It always is.
I think it's Roke.
Roke.
Is it Roke or Rogue?
R-O-Q.
It's the French pronunciation of Rogue, Chris.
Well, there you go. See, it's Rogue.
But also, I think they were...
I watched the English translation.
They had hid that turn because you think that... Because they already had that fight over Aisha coming. Like, and then... You think she's maybe the double agent. You're not really sure what's going on. You know that something's going on. They're aware of what they're doing, but I didn't see it being Roke. So I was still surprised by that, but I think that's a good thing. Like, I just didn't know if it was.
They threw you off when they went to Goliath, when they went to the pier.
Yeah.
They threw you off on that because you weren't expecting, because really Clay was only going with Roke, and it was the other people who sort of, you know, Cougar jumped in, then it was Jensen, then it was Pooch.
Right.
Yeah. And I think at that moment, you're supposed to believe it's the. What's her name? The female lead in this, that she's the one who betrayed them.
No, I think Max is very all powerful. That's probably the reason why some of the stuff might feel disconnected, because you just don't, you know, he's powerful, but the comic does a much better job fleshing out how powerful he is.
So this movie is about 97 minutes long, as just over an hour and a half. How did it feel? Did it feel pacing wise? It is.
I thought it was fast. Like, I don't think it was too, I don't think it needed a lot more. Again, I kind of mentioned earlier, I had a problem learning who everybody was on the team. In fact, I thought there was 10 people in that original mission until later on. I was like, oh, it's only 5. I don't know where I got these other people from. So it was a good length. I never got bored. I sat through it in one sitting. I didn't have to wish things didn't go there. There were still other scenes that weren't just combat. There was, the love scenes. There's all the kind of character building with people finding out about his wife is... due soon. Like, all that was done very well and quick. So I had no problem with the pacing. But again, I don't know what they cut out of the original material to say, oh, they could have added 30 minutes and done this or that. I thought it was connected enough with what I did see.
For a book like this, too much is too much. So for a series like this, a long, lengthy series, too much is too much. This is just enough over the top. Probably for me, I come from the perspective of looking at it. Most times when comic movies come out, the comics will shift towards the character in the movies, which is always what ends up, especially lately, they just seem to move towards looking like the person playing them. This was actually the other way around. These guys actually fit into the roles that were already written on paper, that were already drawn out. The art was so good. They fit them in, from the goatee to the way they look, to the way they just fit them into that role. And I think that made this movie kind of, and like from a pacing perspective, it just moved forward. Add more stuff to it. You can make another movie. And that's the sad part, is that you could have made another movie, but.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit. I think this movie flowed very quickly. If you had told me James Gunn wrote and directed this, I would have believed you. It really felt like that Suicide Squad movie we watched a few months ago. Like the pacing of it, sort of the way it moved. Like there was action, action, action. There was a little bit of downtime, action, action. Like I did not get bored at a single time. I didn't pause it. Sat right through this. It was. I like the pacing of this movie. It's. I think Fergal, you kind of touched on it. If there was more to it, I think it would have been too long. But I don't think it could have been shorter.
Right amount of time. That's where it's at. That's when you're doing independent runs and you're just trying to have a fun movie, then this is a good way to do it. This was a pretty good adaption. It missed a few marks, but considering that we've reviewed adaptions where I think they only read the first page and then they went off on their own, this is a much better all the way through storyline.
For the source material, is this only like the first third of what was published? Is there more on this story, or is this kind of completed all?
This is within the first 12 issues, to 12. I mean, like, and less. So it's really, it's sort of, because what they end up doing is exploring who Max is. And Max is the handler. So it wasn't someone who just jumped on the phone. Max is known, but just who and what and how and where. That stuff is really pretty cool.
Yeah. I saw it somewhere. It's the first arc of the storyline. Yes. And the second movie was supposed to be the second arc from it. But so they actually tried adapting as much as they could from it. Jeremy, you kind of alluded earlier about the soundtrack for this. And as our resident music guy, how'd you feel the soundtrack was?
It's good. It's good. I thought, like I said, they used Black Betty in the beginning. They played Don't Stop Believing several times, which, I mean, honestly, any movie, they can play it nonstop, and I'd be fine with that. I do understand. I was baffled by the lack of Even the Losers by Tom Petty not being. Even the outro theme, like after the movie ends and they're just doing, like, that would have been a great outro theme instead of Don't Stop Believing again, but it's okay. It was still a good soundtrack, though. I thought it fit well, and it wasn't overpowering.
No, I actually agree. I think the soundtrack is phenomenal. Again, there are certain songs that, you know, again, there's a song that can pick you up to a scene. Don't Stop Believing is clearly one of them. That scene, if you YouTube clip that thing, has millions of views across all kinds of places. So it's a great, great soundtrack. I think, you know, at the end with the Petunias and the soccer and the whole thing there, that makes it even better. I mean, there are different moments that I just think this is a good soundtrack, and the sexy scene, the sexy time was good music.
I do enjoy that they had that little tiny epilogue at the end of the
yes.
going to see the soccer game.
Yes. Yes. It's a conspiracy. How far up does it go?
Yeah. I do like the fact that he got in the face of the ref over this little tiny soccer game that was going on. Having gone to many of those games, you know, with little kids. Yeah. That happens. People get mad all the time.
It does. Probably more little girl matches than boy matches.
Yeah, it's my oldest used to play soccer quite a bit. They people got very heated during those games. Now, this movie has in it, Jeremy, we did the math before taping. Was it four or five people are in other comic book movies?
I think it was four that we knew.
Yeah, so Fergal, my question for you is, as a fan of the multiverse, does this movie confirm that the multiverse exists?
Oh, this is DC, not Marvel. So if you're meaning in the DC multiverse, then yes, they do appear in later lines in Crisis on Infinite Earths. They are one of the groups.
I think you misunderstood the question. Meaning that it's not a serious question. But
are you asking me this as a nerd? Because I'm giving you a seriously technical answer right now.
Yeah, Chris was like,
I'm not talking, like, they're having DC is, Marvel crossovers.
You can't mess with me, Chris.
The fact that this movie basically brings all these comic book actors into one movie. How'd you feel about that?
I just think that they brought together people who had really good chemistry together, and it made sense. Just by the fact that they were all getting ready to be explosive Marvel awesomeness is also awesome. But really, it's because they get along with each other. I mean, they really do play off each other very well.
Well, I was trying to think of a better question, because our original question on the show flow is, given all the penis shots, which crotch was your favorite, Fergal?
Well, I mean, I would have actually preferred that question other than the multiverse question, because, yeah, my mind started moving on that one. Now you're like, I actually read background on this, so we can dive into this in a very detailed string theory, singularity type situation.
And Jeremy, your answer?
I mean, it's Jansen in the elevator, right? You didn't get to see it, but it was apparently marvelous. So Take that.
Yeah, none of those women complained. Let's just be honest. That in normal HR environment, somebody probably would have complained.
Honestly, any elevator I've ever done that in, no one's a fan. So, you know, good for him.
Now, this movie was a flop when it came out. I think it cost them $25 million to make. They made $24 million. It just bombed at the theaters. Why didn't this movie do better?
There was a lot of bad noise. Same thing that's happening lately on movies. When this movie came out, there may have been some stuff going on. It's 2010. There was a lot of white noise around this area. I just don't think it was able to break through. I think there was some movie was coming out around the same time as this movie out that just sort of blew this movie out of the water. That's probably a big reason. I didn't see it in theaters, so I don't think they put enough, which is stupid because when you get these many actors in one film, considering the stuff that's been coming out lately, you could have turned this into a masterpiece.
Yeah, I don't remember this coming out. I loosely remember this being a poster or whatever, but I don't know anything about this movie. So you have a comic that I'm sure a lot of people didn't realize was a comic, and then just it looked like every other action movie at first, to me at least. I was like, yeah, I'll get to that eventually. But I don't know, maybe it's just bad marketing, I guess, because it's a better movie than I thought we were going to watch.
Yeah, I think it was mainly around marketing. I mean, it could be the fact that the A-Team came out the same year, and maybe people are like, I don't want a cheap copy of the original.
Did the A-Team come out the same year?
It did.
Look, we don't even have to go further than that. We could just go right and just like, oh, there were two A-Teams in one year. It's two A-Teams too many. That's just the simple problem, folks. I think we solved it for you on the show.
Now, when I was doing some research on this movie, I could only find one alternative casting. It seemed like they got everybody they wanted initially out of the gate, that or nobody wanted to be part of it. And the only other actor I could find, and they didn't really know which role to put him into, only he was one of the five, and that was Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, the sniper.
I think that would have been too on the nose. But the other thing was, there was some talk of this movie being a rated R movie versus a PG-13. Do you think if it was a rated R movie, it would have done better?
A little bit more bloody. No. It just didn't have the right audience. And now that you told me the A-Team came out, the A-Team was so effing A-Team. So at that point, anything after that, you're like, another fucking A-Team movie? I will Netflix this bitch and chill.
Yeah, if you told me this was a Netflix movie, I would have believed you. I really would have, because it looks like one. But when it comes down to this movie, guys, what did you love about it and what could they have done better?
I just love the way they put it together. I think they put it together really well. They have great scenes. I wish they would have showed off a little bit more of their skills. And I wish they would have fleshed out Max a little bit more, maybe just given enough, just a little bit more behind who he is. Now, I think they ended well, but you know, those are my couple bitchy moaning type situations. Not many.
Yeah, I would agree that having them use their abilities more, like I said, I didn't know that one dude was heavy weapons still. Like, I don't know what they did to chill it at all. Like, you could drive a car. Like, that was pretty much his heavy weapon skill, but.
Well, fly a helicopter and drive a bus. Yeah.
And he's got no legs.
And he's a legless pooch.
That would have been it for the that part of it. Other than that, I mean, I didn't need to know more about Max, especially, again, we've already spoiled the movie, but the fact that he doesn't die. Like, the end of the movie isn't them killing Max, even though that's what you think it is. It's them stopping this explosion and kind of saving the day, and he escapes on a bus, of all things. But like that, I don't need to know more about Max yet, but I was assuming there was going to be more to this, or that the comic took more from this, because it doesn't truly end the problem. Max is still around. He still seems to have whatever his position is. So, yeah, I think just knowing more about these characters, I don't need to know more about their personal lives, just their skills, better use of those skills.
I did like the fact that Max fled the scene on mass transit.
Yes, it was very Ferris Bueller and speed.
Well, especially because he had a helicopter that was coming to get him, and the helicopter didn't crash. It got shot at, but then the other dude jumped off the crane. He could have just come back on the helicopter, but for some reason, instead, he just took a bus.
You took a bus.
Yeah, I love the over-the-top action. However, it still felt a little bit grounded. Like, a sort of good comparison I was trying to think of one was like The Transporter versus Fast and the Furious. It felt more like The Transporter, which I enjoy, than the crazy over-the-top of Fast and the Furious. But
Fast and Furious is over-the-top?
Yes, and I wanted some... I definitely wanted more cougar action in this.
Agreed. I think we all want some more cougar action anyway, because aren't we all... like cougar, like lions or cougar males. So wouldn't we want cougar female action?
I'm a tired old lion. That's what I am. slow going, just bacon in the sun.
That's the way I like to be.
Imagine this movie was more successful than it was. Would you have wanted to see the sequel?
Of course.
Yeah, I actually was. I know there weren't more, but like I said, now I'm more interested in going back to read the source material, knowing that it continues the story, because I do want to know what they do from there. My fear of it would have been, not knowing the source material, was that this would become something more like the A-Team, right? Where each thing is its own mission that has nothing to do with an overarching story. I'm kind of glad to know that the source material at least continues that overarching Max storyline. So
if this movie were to come out, if you were to find this movie on, let's say, HBO Max or even Tubi, should people go out and watch it?
Well, I paid $3.79 to see it, so clearly somebody should watch it.
Yeah, I had to as well. It's not on Tubi. It's not on any of those sites I already pay for. I had to buy it on another service, but it was worth it, and I did enjoy it. Like I said, I had low expectations going in because I didn't know anything about it, and it looked like a very simple, like, action-y movie, but I liked it a lot. So for free, 100%, check it out for free.
For those of us that have spent a well-earned cheeseburger or meal, then yeah, I mean, you really want to enjoy comics and crazy action movies.
It's funny you said. So I was looking for where to find the streaming as well, and I could not find it either. But I did find like one of those like multi-pack movies, four movies in one box for like $12. And ironically enough, it has all the our next movies in it. So if you're out there looking on Amazon, cool. You find that four movie pack thing, it's got all our next set of movies in there. So I am fine.
They're not going to tell them what they are. It's a secret. You could be any three movies because we didn't tell anybody. Whatever they are is the next three movies we're doing. It doesn't matter. It's a four pack that makes no sense. It's this. It's Garfield. It's
the best multi packs you've ever seen.
Ghost World. Like, what a weird pack.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
That'd be hilarious if it's like Casper from the 30s was next.
Have you seen the new Spider-Man Noir trailer, by the way? Have complete change the subject. Have any of you guys actually catch the live action trailer?
No.
It's very short and it's intense. If I mean, Nick's getting old, obviously, but they pulled him off pretty well. I think a lot of it's kind of very well done CG, but they pulled him off very well.
Wait, is it CGI or live action?
It's live action.
I have not seen this. I've got to go see that because I have not seen that yet. And yeah, Nick Cage doing a live action noir has got to be hilarious.
They pulled him off pretty darn well. Yeah,
I like that you've said it three times that they've pulled off Nick Cage like three times. Oh, they pulled him off.
That's to say, if you've looked at Nick Cage recently, you realize he's kind of gone off the rail.
That's how he shoots Webb, that person.
Yeah. Jeremy, that's in his contract. Pulled off three times.
That's it.
As friend of the show, would love to have him on.
Only green M&Ms and that.
But let's circle back to the movie we just watched, The Losers. Would you guys, what rating would you give it? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'd give it, and I just feel like now that I've got you gentlemen on video, I should share this. I would give it my patented, they did funky stuff with my mind, and I'll stop your heart with my fingers in the air, double fingers, and then a backwards with little hands and impossible shot. There it is. I'd give it that.
I was going to say, I'm going to give it a thumbs up on a half white, half black glove.
I'd give it one bobblehead chihuahua up.
Nice. That's perfect.
If you've seen the movie, you understand. If you haven't seen the movie, then go watch it.
Then, hey, we just told you what happens in it.
It's all spoiled.
The rest of it can be found on YouTube in clips.
So, guys, I guess we should head out for the night. So, Jeremy, where can people find you besides here?
Oh, yeah. So I'm always here. But also, I do the Retrovaniacs Retro Gaming Podcast, where we talk about old video games all the time. I don't know exactly what we're talking about at the moment because we record this show well before it airs. Well, Retrovaniacs records the night before when I finally get everyone on the phone.
I don't even know how I top that.
And Fergal, where can people find you these days?
You can find me getting my nerd on at Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And we are working towards building our Gotham Knight Returns, call it part two. We're not doing it Tim Burton style. We're going a different style. We're going Snyder gun cut. We're going to do the Snyder gun cut. There it is. We're doing this. I mean, I spoiled it. I dropped it for everyone. But it's a Snyder gun cut.
And for me, you can always find me at All Panel Creation. We're always over, but they're building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank you for spending some time with us today. And if you think there's an even better Chris Evans movie, which I don't think there is, send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo. Produced by me, Chris Roberts. Executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You could be any three movies because we didn't tell anybody. Whatever they are is the next three movies we're doing. It doesn't matter. It's a four-pack that makes no sense. It's this. It's Garfield.